Welcome to the Loftist Party Podcast. We've got a great one for you. We're doing this one in chunks because over at Camp Liberty Gypsy, they got a storm rolling in. And up here at the Loftist Party East, we got storms rolling in. We got a little crossfire hurricane of our own. So because we're so dedicated to you, our wonderful listeners, we're gonna record a little hunk today, a little hunk tomorrow, to bring you the finest in high quality political comedy infotainment. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
It does. Oh, that was, you were a little
I was
lame.
A little slow.
And lame. I didn't like your read on that one. I'm like, how's that sound? You're like, sounds great. Okay. There's we have to talk about the RNC. This is the big, this is the 900-pound gorilla in the room. It might have been a 600-pound gorilla, but man, that thing's been eating like crazy. We got to talk about the big differences that we had and what we saw and our takeaway and the inspiration and blah, 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 blah. Here's the thing, you lucky listeners. Here's the thing. The Liberty Gimlet, I think, watched every second. She watched every
second.
I had to. She's got now. Why did you have to? I watched a lot. I watched a lot. Unfortunately, life got in the way a little bit. But I did watch quite a bit. So why did you have to watch every second?
The same reason I had to watch the Democrats. The PJ Media team does a live blog during the debates, so we're like writing it while it's happening.
Okay.
And commenting on it. For people who can't watch it or only want to watch part of it, and especially those who didn't want to watch the Democratic debate at all. So,
yeah.
Or the Democratic convention at all. So, yeah, we do it live.
As I'm thinking about it, I think I might have watched more of the DNC than I did the RNC. And here's my question for you. We talked this a little bit last week. I flipped a lid when Joe Biden came out with that whole Charlottesville lie again, the whole good people on both sides. Has anybody fact-checked that yet? Has anybody, like, held his feet to the fire on that one? Like, I don't think anybody has.
Not with him personally, but PolitiFact fact-checked it way back when he launched his campaign. And while they didn't rate it as totally false, they did rated as mostly false, I believe. The other thing that was really interesting is that there was a Rasmussen poll that came out yesterday, I think. Mm-hmm. It was either yesterday or Thursday that said 52% of Americans know that's not true.
Well, that's fantastic. That's fantastic and good. I want that number to go up. Yeah. I know the BBC fact checked it. That was the only one I could find last week.
The ones that fact-checked it originally were when he did his campaign launch and used it. But here's my thing about Joe Biden continuing to use that.
Yeah.
Okay. Hawaiian shirt, tiki torch carrying leader now endorses you, Joe.
Oh, that's
really
right.
You're really worried about guys with veins bulging out of their neck saying anti-Semitic things. You have open anti-Semites in your party, and three of them spoke at your convention. So you really need to shut up.
You're talking about, I think that guy's name is Spencer, right? Richard Spencer?
Richard B. Spencer.
Yeah.
To be specific.
It's just...
But I mean, you have Ilhan Omar.
Yeah.
You have Tamika Malloy. You have Linda Sarsour. And those are just the ones I can name off the top of my head. And then you have six supporters of Louis Farrakhan, who's the biggest anti-Semite in the world. Convention and you want to use the Charlottesville lie, like, literally makes my head want to explode.
It really does, you know, and it's funny, and we'll key more on the, we're not going to blow past the RNC, you guys. We're going to talk about it. It's worth discussing. It really is. But it's just funny to me. And this is why, you guys, and I'm not blowing smoke. I'm just telling you the truth. Gimlet and I are ahead of the curve. We're ahead of the curve. We've been saying for the longest time, we got to lift each other up. We got to support new media. We got to support other content creators. Bah, 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 bah. I just retweeted it, like, Sarah Carter. Very smart, Very smart lady. Very. She's on Fox News all the time. She just did a video. It just occurred to her. She's like, I have 1.3 million followers on Twitter, and my voice is being silenced, and we got to try to help each other out. And I'm like, welcome aboard. You are now officially invited to the Loftus Party barbecue.
It's welcome, like, to the club.
It is the only way to go. And I say this because the whole Joe Biden Charlottesville thing, and there's not enough pushback on that. And then I saw this. We know the media is all in for Biden. We know it. So the only thing we can do is, like, to keep, you know, creating our own. You see, this was on Twitter this morning. There was some reporter somewhere getting ready to set up a shot. He was getting ready to, you know, has a little camera out there and his cameraman, and some Trump supporter, I think in New Hampshire, bigger fella, you know, decided he was going to confront the reporter. He did it from like 4 or 5 feet away. He's not wearing a mask, and he's like, hey, how do you sleep at night telling your lies? You know what you are? And then he calls him a name, and then he's getting no reaction from the reporter. The reporter's pretending to text. He's pretending to be interested in his phone, and the guy keeps calling names, and he says some really stupid things, and right now the media is shocked by that. They're shocked by it. They're like, look at this. Horrible. And I'm dying laughing over here. First of all, it's a dumb move. Dumb move by the Trump supporter to do that, right? Mm-hmm. But the media is just shocked and outraged by this. This could have gotten violent. This, listen to the words that this guy's saying. And then the deafening silence on everybody who was walking out of that Republican convention in D.C. Mm-hmm. They went after Dan Bongino. And listen, Bongino was on the news talking about, hey, Bongino's no slouch. That guy's like 6'1".
He's a former Secret Service agent.
And he's thick. He lifts. He knows how to fight. But like he said it great. He's like, I can't beat up 20 people. I can't take on 20 people. That's just how it is. Nope. And they went after Rand Paul. And I'm going somewhere with this, and I might be getting ahead of myself. But they went after Rand Paul and his wife, which is especially stupid, because Rand Paul was actually the co-author of some bill about named for Breonna Taylor, and he's on your side, you idiots. He's on the side of law and order. But they attacked Rand Paul. They attacked his wife. Blah blah. That's not shocking to anybody because the media decides that it's not shocking. Here's where we are. And I hope I'm wrong on this one. I really hope I'm wrong on this one. Because there hasn't been any pushback from Biden or anybody on the left, I think I got the bad, bad juju going on. I got the butterflies in the tummy that we are right on the verge of another Steve Scalise baseball event. That was a few years ago, but someone on the left was so tweaked, you know, about Bernie Sanders and what happened that he decided that he was going to go out and just start blasting Republicans. And because there was good people there with guns, because there was like cops and it didn't turn into a complete and total bloodbath. But this rhetoric, when you have, who's that black bald chick? Who
Ayanna Pressley. She's part of the squad.
Where is she from?
Massachusetts.
Wow, that chick is bad news. She's bad news because she's I used to
think she was the most reasonable one, and it turns out I was wrong.
she looks like a villain out of like a new Superman comic book. Like literally with those eyebrows and. The bald head looks good on her. Some chicks look good with bald, but man, she's like dialing up the hate speech. And then Nancy Pelosi was calling people the enemy of the state recently, and it's just like that's all they have. We'll circle back now to the DNC and the RNC. Here's my takeaway. Here's what I saw. There was no policy put out by the DNC. It was literally just sadly Trump's a big meanie. He's a big meanie. It's a battle for the soul. Oh, why is he so mean? We need a leader who can hug, that kind of stuff. And then of course, Trump and the RNC rolled out plans. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to keep America great. Here's the kind of, here's how we're going to create jobs, yada, yada, yada. And Biden, I'll give him, I mean, he did say some pie in the sky crap. He's like, we're going to do green energy and we're going to create 5 million jobs. Yeah, the moonshot. So what are your thoughts? Tell me something. Well, tell me something I don't know about the RNC and the DNC.
Okay, here's my overarching point of view. Production value by the RNC, fabulous.
Those fireworks,
the vignettes not narrated by John Boyd or John John Boyd, yeah.
Yeah.
The only better narrator would have been like Darth Vader.
James
the guy who did Darth Vader. I just lost his name. Sorry.
Or Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, but Morgan Freeman's a raging lib, so. Anyway, so those were awesome. And what the GOP has figured out under Ronna McDaniel and Donald Trump is stop talking about charts, stop talking about graphs, stop talking about tax brackets, talk about stories that paint your picture.
Yes.
Stories from regular Americans, stories from other Republicans, stories from people who are not somebody you would think traditionally would be in the Republican Party, and show what we actually are. We are an all-inclusive, diverse, big tent party now because we love America and most Americans do.
And that's
what I took away from the RNC.
That is the battle between the old guard and the new guard. Mm-hmm. And once again, I'm going to pat us on the back. We've been saying it on this program for a long, long time, years. It's about emotion. You can get up there with your wipe-off board and go, well, you know, the rate of consistent growth of the economy under the Obama administration was a 2.2. However, by inverting the curve of the inflection point and getting 2% more to the blah, blah, we were managed to increase it. No one gives a damn about that stuff.
We walked away from the wonks.
Yeah.
There were no wonks at this convention, and it was fabulous.
I
loved the mom about school choice. I loved the McCloskeys. Say what you want about them. They were absolutely 100% correct. And man, CNN hated them.
Yes.
I'm trying to think. That pardon, I cried. I literally cried.
Oh, goodness. The Cuban guy. I've watched that speech three times.
Fox talked over that. What the world? Oh.
I'm going to take the Fifth Amendment on that one. I've watched that guy's speech like three times. I get choked up every time. There's nowhere else to go.
He got choked up.
Oh, because it's important. It's the most important thing. And then that's like, I did that stupid song, There's Nowhere Else to Go. I'm like, well, me and the old Cuban guy, we got it together. That is...
Did you see? Did you see Ann Dorn?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God!
I was just about to bring that up. It is heartbreaking. It was a God bless that lady for doing what she did, and it was fantastic. It's so clear to me now that if the media wasn't propping up the left, they would have nothing. Like, seriously, this is not hyperbole, but what has the Democrat Party like ever done? Like successfully, like what city have they descended upon and turned it into a Shangri-La? You cannot put your finger on any of it. It's all just these like, we have good intentions, and it's epic fail after epic fail after epic fail, and it's an exciting time to be alive, because here we go. It's all or nothing. We're at the big casino now, bitches. It is all. We keep our country or we lose it. I know everybody. I was just on the phone with a buddy of mine. And he was talking about his backup plan. Like, everyone I know has a plan B. You're already set. You're already living that gypsy life. You know, you got
there
it good.
There was a line. There's a line outside of the U-Haul office.
I saw
on
that.
The west side. Did you see that?
Yeah, in New York. And you're like, wow, yep. that's a lot of people standing out there. And then the camera pans up to show the U-Haul mm-hmm. thing.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't good. New York will survive, but it's going to be weird. Go ahead.
The other favorite moment that I had, and yeah. I don't know who decided, like whoever decided how to camera shoot this thing was a professional. Okay. Because when you long shot Melania walking towards the stage,
yeah,
that's just majestic. And then they did it again after Mike Pence's speech, which was very, very good.
Yeah.
They had Trump and Melania coming together to the stage, and Trump made a big deal out of Mike Pence, pointing at him, I love this guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched, and he taps Melania on the shoulder, and he points off the stage, and then he starts walking around, and I'm like, oh my God, the Secret Service is having a fit right now. Right?
Yeah.
He just walked right up to the barricade to talk to those wounded soldiers who all got up with their walkers and with assistance and stood at that barricade and saluted the president. And then he was so animated with them, talking to them, thanking them for their service. I mean, that was genuine Donald Trump. He yes. really loves people.
Yeah.
And he loves the military. And I mean, he was down there and he was animated. And I was like, we need to see more of that guy.
It is, it's interesting and it's funny, but that is what, if you think about it, as you were telling that story, and I was thinking about it and listening, and it hit me, like, in New York, he didn't really fit in with the upper crust because mm-hmm. he's super comfortable with the construction guys. He's yep. super comfortable with the dudes who are actually doing the building, and he's checking in. And it is funny to watch. I'm so happy he got elected in 2016. I really, really did, because he's not a politician. He's not. I mean, all this stuff about the swamp, it's legit. It is legit. He messed up the plan by getting elected. And there was a delightful thread by Glenn Beck this morning on Twitter.
Yep.
And I'm like, we had Chad Prather on the show last week, and Chad works for Glenn and loves him and all that stuff. But like, good for Glenn Beck to do it. For the listeners, here's what Glenn said. He's like, I won't apologize. Of course, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, I was a jackass in 2016. I want to apologize for some of the stuff that I said, and it got heated. And like, it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch all these people who were just like, you know, really holding back. And you have to think about where everyone was back in 2016, because there was a lot of people on the right who were like, hey, Trump's a Democrat. He's a Democrat. He's going to get in there. He's lying. He's not going to do this. He's not going to do that. And then the wonderful realization when you see it, the light goes on in people's eyes, and they're like, wow, he's doing it. He's doing what he said he would do. And you can see when someone is trying. Like, mm-hmm. you can see when there's a person in the White House who's legit trying, and not just trying to manage the problem, and we're going to do a study on that, and in 10 years, we hope to. When you have a guy in there who's used to building buildings and getting things done, and no BS, is goes, okay, move that. Yeah, just move the frickin' embassy to Jerusalem. I'm done playing this game. Get us out of the Paris Accord. That's ridiculous. NATO, you got to pay your bills or we're leaving. Hey, Iran, you guys can't have nukes. No, no deal. Just boom, 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 getting it done. Our society would be so much better off. And I'm not talking about changing the Constitution or keeping people or electing emperors, but like, we need This is what, in my opinion, the founding fathers wanted. They wanted capable people in the job. You do your time, you genuinely try to help, and then you bow out and you go back to your private life. That's what it's all about. Woo, we're fired up. A little walk through history there. Okay, stick around. We got a bunch more show. We got a surprise for you. We got a little surprise guest, so hold on for that. And if we don't have a guest, if something happens with the power, it'll be me again. So either way, it's a win-win-win. We'll be right back.
Okay, odds are you're one of the people in America who's better off today than 3 years ago. And now you've got some smug Democrat calling you racist and trying to jam one hand in your ass and another in your pocket. So at a time when taxes are down, jobs are up, and the economy is way up, it'd be nice if there were a candidate who had more to offer than making you pay for other people's shit. Well, the eagle has landed. Say hello to President Donald J. Trump. He ain't just making America great again. Trump's doing things no president has ever done before. He's keeping promises, packing courts, defending the border, rebuilding our military, and making Chuck Schumer cry like a schoolgirl with two skinned knees. This president is 6'3" of let's put America first. And oh yeah, immigration, jobs, drug prices, nobody's got better numbers. The game has changed, and the Democrats are officially fucking crazy. So keep America great. Stand with Trump in 2020.
We are thrilled to have this next guest with us. You guys, something you need to know about me. I am a comic book nut. I am a sci-fi nut. I'm a fantasy nut. I read it. I ingest it. I learn it. Love it. Live it. So my next guest is all that and more. You guys, we have a gentleman on the show who has an incredible history. With the form, with the format, now he's branching out into novels. But just to give you a little backstory, has this dude written on The Punisher? Yup. Has he written on The Flash? Yup. Star Wars, Batman, you know it. He's also created some amazing characters like the Badger, and he's also created characters and forms like Nexus. We're thrilled to have this guy with us. We got Mike Barron. Mike, are you there, bud?
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
This is great. This is great. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this. We're not going to go. We'll start with now, and then we'll go back to the past. So we're going to do it Pulp Fiction style. What are you working on now? What has you excited right now as we speak?
I just finished writing a graphic novel called Thin Blue Line.
Ooh.
With a friend of mine who's both a police officer and a very fine comic book artist.
Wow.
And it's about everything that's happening right now. Joe is just beginning to illustrate it. He works full-time as a cop, but he says he can turn out 4 penciled pages a week. And we have a great inker, Jeff Slemons, just one of the greatest artists I know. Just go to jeffslemons.com. So I'm stoked on that, but that's going to be a long time before we launch the crowdfunder for that sometime next year, because it's going to take a while to get it done. I'm also writing my 8th Josh Pratt novel in my Biker series. And if you like suspense crime thrillers, you'll like Biker. Josh is a reformed motorcycle hoodlum who went to prison and found God and comes out and tries to turn his life around. He's a type well known to thriller readers like Jack Reacher or Philip Marlowe or Travis McGee,
who is my
inspiration for writing today, John D. MacDonald. But Josh puts his own spin on things. There are 7 books out now in the series. They're all available. They're all on Amazon. And they're grim, Jim. If you like tense thrillers and crime thrillers, they're for you. I also just finished a Badger novel, which is being edited. And yeah, we will offer that next year. And I'm also working with Mike Miller and Doug Tenapil on a Bigfoot Bill Lone Star Nexus crossover.
What the Sam Hill? Dude, what? You have like seven different plates spinning. You have seven different plates spinning. I want to go back to I got to go back to this motorcycle character that you have. What's the name of that series again?
Biker.
Okay. Now when did the first episode of Biker come out? When did the first edition come out of that?
Well, geez, it was at least 5 or 6 years ago when Airship 27 published the very first Biker story, and then I took it to another publisher, and they published four books in the series, but they really had no budget for marketing, and nobody ever saw the books. So then I went to Wolfpack Publishing, and Wolfpack is a very solid mid-sized publisher that specializes in crime, suspense, thrillers, and westerns.
Yeah.
And Mike Bray snapped them all up, and now there are seven out in the series, and I'm working on the eighth now.
That's fantastic. That's a successful title for you, right? I mean, it sounds like you're talking about seven, eight installments.
Those who read it love it. But it's not exactly setting the world on fire. There's a lot of competition out there. By far, my most successful book with Wolfpack is Florida Man, which dwarfs everything else. And as you know, I mean, Florida Man is a humor book. It's laugh out loud funny. It may be the funniest novel ever written, he said modestly. But everybody who reads it says, I mean, the reviews say, I had to keep wiping the tears out of my eyes every few minutes. And my wife got irritated with me every time I read to her a passage from the book, but it was too funny not to share. And there are now two Florida Man books out. The first is called Florida Man, and the second is called Hogzilla. And we're working right now on the Florida Man graphic novel, which we hope to have done by the end of the year. Todd Mulrooney is the artist. Todd did the design for the book cover, and everybody who's seen the book cover has freaked out. They just love it. Have you seen the book cover?
I have not. I was doing a little bit of research into you because I've decided to turn over a new leaf. And actually pretend to know what I'm talking about. And I brought up your Wikipedia, and there's just so much here. It's fantastic. Just your pedigree.
I don't know about that. I never look at it, and I had nothing to do with that. But no, thank you very much.
Those people never do. They never do. You've got to keep looking forward. But I'm stoked for the Florida Man graphic novel. That seems like that seems ripe. Okay, here's my question before I get too ahead of myself and get too excited about Florida Man and the graphic novel and all that other stuff. What is the state? How would you describe the state of affairs in the comic book industry? Is it I hear it's kind of grim right now.
Yeah, they don't know whether to shit or go blind. The physical book is in danger. The traditional comic books, and by that I mean Marvel, DC, and a few lesser titles. Are you Michael Loftus Comic on Twitter?
I am. That is my personal account. I am also The Loftus Party on Twitter. That's the wonderful. Yeah.
I'd like to post to you the cover of the Florida Man novel.
Yeah. Yeah, listen to you type. I'm jealous of those skills.
Okay,
so
off this party.
This is the overall theme as I get it, as an outsider looking in. Seems to me that that the comic books are actually the canary in the coal mine. They made the turn quite a few years ago to do more like social justice. Oh, we're gonna have a superhero to fit. We're going to have a girl superhero from this, and her powers are all going to be very reflective of modern society. And it just seems kind of lame. It seems like they're chasing a demographic, and they're not worried about the stories. And now that's infected everything.
I'd like to address
Star Wars. Go ahead, yeah.
Well, there are a number of reasons contributing to the demise of comics, and one which is, generally goes unspoken is the rise of video games. And the fact is that a good video game simply gives you much more bang for your buck than a $4 or $5 comic. It's better done, it's more entertaining, it's more involving. I have not read comics regularly in about 10 years. Every time I dip back in just to see what's going on, I'm very disappointed. And yeah. Now, what you're talking about are writers who do not know how to entertain, and instead they come in with an agenda, and they think that they're there to change society. No.
Yes, yes.
The writer's first duty is to entertain. That's my number one rule. If you don't entertain, you're going to lose everybody. And that doesn't mean you can't bring up social issues. There are a number of very great books that are very entertaining that bring up social issues. To Kill a Mockingbird, The Grapes of Wrath. Those books both entertain and they enlighten. But that's because they're written by experienced storytellers who know how to grab an audience by the throat. Everything I do, my goal is to grab the reader by the throat and drag him into the narrative to the exclusion of all else. Well, how do you do that? You use every trick in the book. You have a compelling character. It's my belief that the reader wants someone with whom they can identify. You have an amazing plot or great idea, like Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
The concept alone is intriguing. You have a seductive narrative voice. That is, the dialogue rings true and it entertains. All these things are missing from modern comics for the most part. And I always say comics are the most forgiving medium there is. You can get away with stuff in comics you could never get away with in other medium. And the proof is Superman himself. It took 50 years for the cinema to catch up with Superman. Mutant Teenage Ninja Turtles. I mean, if you had pitched that to a filmmaker or a publisher 40 years ago, they would have laughed in your face. Flaming Carrot. And these are just examples of the type of thing that a comic book form will legitimize that you can't legitimize in any other medium. And of course, once it's legitimized in comics, then it will cross over to other mediums.
Yeah, here's the very strange phenomenon, and this could be an apocryphal story. This could just be something that I want to be true. This is what I've heard on the street, that like there is a nostalgia. There's people like me. I love graphic novels. I dig it. I grew up on comic books. I dig graphic novels, and they're still around. And maybe you've heard this story as well. When Robert Downey Jr. was successful as Iron Man and he signed a big contract with Marvel after, you know, I think they got him for 3 movies, super cheap. And then he realized, wow, I'm going to be part of this big Marvel universe. I want my own universe I want my own films. He had a script for Sherlock Holmes, which is a franchise that he runs now with his wife. The script wasn't setting the world on fire. He hired a company to turn it into a graphic novel and then took it to Comic-Con. And because the graphic novel was out, then they kind of reverse engineered that. Like, oh, yes, this is a very hot property in the graphic novel world. We should make the movie. Have you heard that story as well?
No, I haven't. And it doesn't surprise me because we see how many comic book properties have been transferred over into film on TV or in movies in recent years. Some are successful, some not so much. I have to say that I'm a big fan of a number of the Marvel films. Other of the Marvel films leave me cold. It just depends on the script. Everything depends on the script.
Yeah, it's all about the storytelling, because you get a character like Captain Marvel, who's just overpowered and has no real struggle and just can seemingly do everything effortlessly. That movie just didn't do it for me. It has nothing to do with a female lead of a movie. It's just like, man, that just she didn't have to try for anything. Everything just came so easy. It was boring for me to watch. So that was a swing and a miss. So
I wouldn't know.
You didn't see Captain Marvel?
No, I'm at a stage in my life where the type of fiction that intrigues me is stuff that stinks of reality. Did you say, yeah, this is real, this is happening? And if I may, I'd like to recommend a movie called The Rider, which is about a rodeo competitor who's recuperating from a skull fracture when a horse threw him. And it's simply about this guy trying to get back in the game. And it stars the actual people who lived this. I mean, it's the two-story, the guy that stars it. It's one of the most gripping movies I've ever seen because everything about it is real and everything about it is fascinating. When it comes to crime fiction, I gravitate towards stories that I believe could happen. I'm a big fan of the Equalizer series, and I wish that Denzel and Antoine would make an Equalizer 3. They're among my favorite action movies. Another movie I'd like to recommend is Dinner Rush, which stars Danny Aiello as the owner of a trendy Tribeca restaurant that the mob is trying to move in on. And nice. It's just about one night in his life at a very busy restaurant, and everything is coming together, and everything happens that night. And it's just monstrously entertaining. It's so beautifully put together. That's the type of entertainment I like, stuff that I can believe in. I can say, yeah, this is really happening.
What was the movie? And I'm trying to think. It starred the guy from Lord of the Rings, who was working in a diner in the middle of nowhere, and then the mob comes in and finds him. He defends himself against them, and then you find out that he used to be an assassin in the mob. Do you remember that movie? What the? Oh man, that was
History of Violence.
Yeah, I love that flick. I gotta check out the Dinner Rush, man.
Dinner Rush. It's just Dinner Rush.
Just Dinner Rush, no the.
And the writer. And by the way, I'm posting the covers of my books on the Loftus Party. I'm just messaging them to you.
I love it. I love it. So tell me about the – you've transitioned from – boy, a long history with comics. And I'd love to – I could spend – an hour talking with you about the Flash and Dark Horse Comics and Star Wars and the Punisher and blah, 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 blah. But you're transitioning into just straight up novels now.
Well, that's what I set out to do. Like I said, it just took me a long time to master the form. But now that I have it, I'm more excited than ever about my writing. And that's one of the bright spots in my life is that I believe my writing has gotten better. And I think it gets better every time I sit down.
Yeah, that is what I tell you. I started as a stand-up comedian, did sketch comedy, wrote sketches, then kind of fell into writing for television and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I always felt like novels, there's a weird thing. When you respect the written word, there's something about just the idea of just having the balls to even think you should write a novel, like, right?
Well, I don't know.
I put it on a pedestal, and now I made the decision that you just have to jump in. It's like learning to swim. You just say, yes, it's probably gonna suck, but the only way to get better is to keep doing it, right?
Yeah, I have a theory that every would-be novelist has a million words of bullshit clogging up his system. And then you have to get that out before you get to the good stuff. And any successful novelist will say the secret is to sit in your chair and type the words.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it might've been Ernest Hemingway or someone like that, who is just like, the only way to get better is just to do it. Just just start and go. So who's a literary voice that you just you look up to and you think, wow, that person just has got it. They're just a gift.
Well, there's a guy named Chuck Logan who lives in Minnesota. He's written a number of thrillers. One called Homefront was turned into an awful movie by Sylvester Stallone.
Okay.
But Logan knows how to grab you. And the freshness of his language just astonishes me. I recommend all his books. And I'll say that for Chuck Dixon's series, too. Levon Cade. And they're all started. Levon's Home, Levon's War, Levon's Mission, Levon's Family. And when I read one of Chuck's Levon books, I get seriously jealous. I say, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Right. How could he write this? But the reason I'm writing today is because of John D. MacDonald, who created Travis McGee, the greatest series character of all time, upon whom Josh is modeled. Well, not modeled, but that's where the inspiration comes from. And while most readers may not know who John D. MacDonald was, they have surely heard of and seen the movie Cape Fear. There are two versions of the movie out, the latter one starring Robert De Niro. That's a typical John D. McDonald story.
Okay. All right.
But there are so many. Another one I got to throw in there is Con Eagleton. He's a historic writer, lives in England. He's got a 6-book series about Genghis Khan that blew my mind.
Really?
Yeah. It's over 1 million words, and you can't put it down.
That's fantastic. So, just before I forget, I want to tell our listeners where they can find your stuff. Give me a website. Give me an Amazon link.
It ain't much. It's bloodyredbaron.com, and we're going to revamp that. But if you go to Amazon and you just type in Mike Baron, stuff will come up.
And that's one R, you guys. We're talking about
one R, just like the Bloody Red Baron. Yeah, and on Twitter, I'm at Bloody Red Baron. And on Facebook, I have a Mike Baron author page. And that's the best way to reach me, to contact me if you have any questions or anything. Twitter, at Bloody Red Baron, and Mike Baron on Facebook.
Okay, that's fantastic. People got to go grab your stuff. It's an exciting time to be a writer, to be an artist, to be a creator. It's fantastic. I would be remiss in my love of Star Wars. I'm looking here. It says that you wrote some Star Wars stuff for Dark Horse Comics once upon a time.
Well, I had the honor of adapting Timothy Zahn's Star Wars trilogy.
And, wow.
And that was a dream job because all I did was I used all of Timothy's own language. I didn't use any of my own.
Okay.
And he writes so visually that it was easy to adapt. And many people consider the Thrawn trilogy, as it's sometimes called because of the villain, Lord Thrawn, the best Star Wars novels ever written. So it was a great honor and a pleasure to work on those. And I'm happy to do it, you know.
Wow. So would that be your – if you had to pick a character from the Star Wars universe, who would be the one that you just find to be the most interesting?
Yoda.
Really? I think that's a phenomenal answer. That's an honest answer. And is it because his backstory is such a mystery that like we meet him when he's, you know, already a few hundred years old?
It's partly that. It's partly the mix of Eastern and Western philosophy. And it's partly his speaking style.
I tell you what, when I first saw Yoda on the screen, I was so bummed out. I was so bummed out. It's weird. That character has grown on me. Because when I was a kid, it sounded, I'm like, okay, that's just Miss Piggy. That's just Miss Piggy talking backwards. And then the more distance you get from it, you're like, yeah, Yoda, man. I'm like,
yeah, man.
I dig it too. It was so satisfying to watch his fight with Emperor Palpatine in whatever that the third in the trilogy was. I'm really, really into it. So listen, you've got a lot on your plate. I want to check out the blue line. Is it the Thin Blue Line?
Thin Blue Line is what we're calling the graphic novel.
I want to check that out. I want to read your stuff. I'm all about the graphic novels. I'm all about the novelist in you. I wish you nothing but success. We're going to have some links up at theloftusparty.com. You've already said your website. Let's say it one more time before we say adieu.
BloodyRedBaron.com.
There you go. You guys, give them a follow. Get some stuff. Let us sally forth and continue to create cool stuff. Dude, I'm so glad to have you on the show. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 5000 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 5000. Enjoy.
Is it too much show? Is it way too awesome? Or is it just the right amount? I'm going to say it's just the right amount. We're back. So much more to discuss. Well, there is a lot to discuss. There's some cool things going on. There's some sad things going on. But it's all interesting. It's a great time to be alive. I know the Gimlet over there in Gypsy Camp is chomping at the bit to talk about these Bernie bros. That's something you haven't heard in a while. The Bernie bros.
It actually struck me. Did you see Rick Grenell's speech?
I did. I did not see it live, but I saw it. I saw it on YouTube.
I thought it was really good. Really yes. good. And, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to Rick Grenell at the RNC in 2016 for a few minutes.
Oh, ho.
And he was making the case about why he was supporting Trump. And I actually wrote about my evolution to agreeing with him over the last several years earlier this week. But some polling came out, and then I heard Rick's speech, and it finally occurred to me, right? Republicans no longer care if other Republicans support Trump. They think his agenda is more important.
Yeah. Yes.
The Republican Party, and Tucker's talked about it for years. Rick's talking about it. You can hear it very clearly. We're the party of the middle class, working class, working Americans now. Donald Trump did that.
Yes.
Because the Democrats actually walked away from those people.
Well, they took them for granted, yes.
They took them for granted, and they walked away starting in the Clinton administration. They are now the party of the very rich and the very poor.
Yes,
so
I agree
Donald
with all
Trump
this.
Is going to take the middle, and Republican voters are like, this is where we're going. America first. We want our trade deals to be as good for us as they are for the other nation. We want our foreign policy to focus on the safety and security of Americans. Yes, 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 yes. We have effectively, on the right, kicked out our establishment. The Michael Steeles, the Jeff Flakes, the Bush 43 people, the Uniparty.
Yes.
And they've all gone over to the Democrats. So there sit the Bernie bros who've been trying to crush the Democratic establishment since 2016. And we did it first.
I agree. And I think that's awesome. I would make the argument, though, that the Bernie bros just got lapped by the extremely charismatic AOC. They just, the squad is the Bernie bros. It's just AOC. It's just a sexier version. It's pretty much the same thing. It's socialism. It's, you know, we'll tell you where you can work, and it's green energy, and it's free healthcare. And it's like, I just don't know. Are there big differences between the squad and Bernie bros? I don't.
Well, I mean, they clearly supported Bernie. All of them did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They wanted him.
Until it was no longer politically expedient for AOC, and then she endorsed Biden.
Right. Right.
She's the best politician of all of them, I think.
Yeah. I don't think. Yeah. The Bernie bros aren't going away. They'll just get folded into AOC's camp. But you brought up something which it reminded me of something that I wanted to bring up on the show. And we got some more entertainment, some more fun stuff coming up in a little bit. But this happened recently? Because you're talking about Rick Grenell and we got rid of the establishment people. Lindsey Graham, this is from The Federalist. Lindsey Graham and his staff kept Republican members of the Judiciary Committee in the dark about an interview of key Russiagate figure Joe Pianka on Thursday. Multiple sources told The Federalist. So they're asserting that there's a bigwig in the Russiagate thing, this Joe Pinka. It's
Joe Pinenka. He was with Peter Strzok when they went to Trump Tower to interview the president and Kluman. Yeah, he was the guy that was supposed to observe the room for behavioral clues.
Right.
And so he was also the one that questioned Mike Flynn with Strzok.
So why doesn't Lindsey Graham want other people in there? Why would Lindsey Graham? Maybe it's just a mistake. Maybe there's nothing to the story. But they got multiple sources that are telling them this and that. I just don't like it.
It's puzzling to me, and this isn't necessarily a defense of Graham, but he's declassified and he's gone public with a lot of the stuff he's found. He's been very upset about the FISA abuse and everything else. So on this particular issue, I mean, he's still a hawk. He's not a fan of America First foreign policy. I get that. But on this particular issue, he's been pretty decent. So I'm confused.
Me too. Mm-hmm. And Lindsey always talks a great game. And he, when he gets upset and heads are going to roll and I'm going to da 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 da. I'm still waiting for the charges against those bitches that lied about Brett Kavanaugh. Remember that? Lindsey was great on TV that day. Oh, we're not going to stand for this. This is the worst thing I've ever seen. Blah, blah, blah. I don't think anything's ever happened. And now
they were referred to the DOJ.
Well,
that was referred to the DOJ. The DOJ never did anything.
And that was before Barr. But that's we got our eyes on all of it. And nothing is more important to me than Russiagate. It really isn't. That's the most important thing. Everything else will come in time. But keep your eye on the prize. And if we can't get to the what, you're laughing.
They could not cut away from Grenell's speech fast enough when he started talking about his time as acting DNI and everything he saw. Like, that appeared nowhere. Nowhere.
He laid it out. And I just want to note this on the podcast as well, just so you guys know what we're talking about. This kind of bookends how we opened up the show with the whole Sarah Carter, blah, 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 blah. I don't know about the other nights of the RNC, but I can say this about the first night. With the Democrat convention, Amazon streaming had all four nights of the Democrats, all four nights. If you had Amazon, if you had Amazon streaming service, you got all four nights uninterrupted. Ba 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 ba. They didn't even offer the RNC. It wasn't even an option. Yeah. It was and that is why we're here. That is why we're doing what we're doing. Because, and this, I'm going to use the Matrix as the metaphor. If you're just sitting there watching Amazon, you're like, oh, I want to be informed. And there's the DNC. And then the Republican thing doesn't even exist. It's as if it never happened. It's not part of your reality. That is diabolical. That is diabolical. Go ahead.
Question.
Yeah.
Does Jeff Bezos know those were Democrats outside his house with a guillotine?
No, they're just the silly masses. They're just the silly masses. This is like someday I hope I'm rich enough to be a Democrat. It's like these people, they never think the mob will come for them. Like Ted Wheeler in Portland. Oh, Ted Wheeler in Portland. Like, he's like, I'm going to send this letter to Donald Trump telling him I don't want his troops in here to help me out. And then they showed up at Ted Wheeler's house. It's just, they were at his condo last night.
Yeah, I know.
It's hilarious. Okay, we got to, I want to talk about a couple more things here. Just a sharp turn. Elon Musk last night. I don't know if you guys saw this, but he has this new product called the Neuralink. I'm going to bring up the tweet on my phone. The Neuralink is it's like a really thick quarter. It's about that size. But if I, this is true, this, I, he's bragging that this thing is amazing. And they got it in a pig. They put it in a pig's brain. And they're saying, oh, this will be good for Alzheimer's. This will be good for schizophrenia. This will change the game. It somehow, I don't know what the interface is like. I don't know what the technology is. But it is like the size of a quarter, very thick, probably about five quarters stacked on top of each other. This goes in your brain.
No.
Yes. And he said in the presentation last night, this is a quote. In the future, you will be able to save and replay memories. And then, of course, the author of the piece was like, it sounds like a Black Mirror episode, because it is. That was a Black Mirror episode. This is a terrifying notion to me. Like, I'm a science fiction guy. People have written books upon books upon books about this very thing. The whole thing terrifies me. It really terrifies me.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So everybody's saying that they're worried that Bill Gates is going to put some kind of little chip in a vaccine.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at Elon Musk wanting to put a unit in your head. No,
I don't think.
What did the pig do that was so fantastic that they think this works?
I don't know, but they probably. If it's my guess, they mapped out the pig's brain. Like, here's what happens when the pig is happy. Here's what happens when the pig is sad. That's what its brain looks like. Then they put in the Neuralink, and then they gave it some kind of jolt or some kind of pulse, or they activated it, and blah 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 blah. And then these other areas of the pig's brain lit up. That's just my guess.
Okay.
But now they're saying
problem with self-driving cars. This is a no.
Oh, I'm not looking forward to it at all. And the implications. So this is the prototype. This is the first round. Blah 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 blah. But where this could go, it could go to a very, very, very dangerous place. We gotta be careful with stuff like that. I'm a huge Elon Musk fan, but wow, dude, be careful with this one. Go ahead.
Ethicists need to be on top of this now, because like CRISPR could be used for so many wonderful things, right?
Yeah.
They've already used it to restore sight for some blind people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, can be truly amazing and life-changing. Medical ethicists need to put the rails on that shit right now, because it's gene editing.
Yes. It's
they
it,
need to
it
look
all
at
goes...
Elon Musk and say, here's your guardrails.
Yeah. Like supposedly they've done on cloning. Now, there was a movie a million years ago with Christopher Walken and Natalie Wood called Brainstorm. This is just me being very old. But Christopher Walken was an inventor, and he had invented this device where you could record your dreams and your thoughts and your experiences, and then you could share them with other people. You had this big device you had to wear, and this is where Natalie Wood died during the making of the movie. And I would invite everybody to watch Brainstorm. It's from the 1970s. At one part, it's very funny. What Christopher Walken's buddy gets a prostitute, and he's just banging this girl. And the guy's wife calls up Christopher Walken and goes, hey, he's been locked into his study for 3 days and he won't come out. And Christopher Walken goes over, and the guy had just put his orgasm on a loop. And Christopher Walken comes in, and the guy's just wearing a bathrobe, just with a device on his head, just twitching out, almost accidentally killed himself. So anyway, that's the comedy of that. But it's a very dangerous thing. One of the, right off the bat, I go to this. Here's, if I'm a supervillain, here's what I do. If I'm a supervillain, I go in there and I go, well, download everything. Just download my whole brain. I want all my thoughts and all my experiences, everything about me. Put it on the Neuralink. And then when I get sick or I'm at the end of my life, download everything onto the Neuralink and just pop that into someone else. And then I'll just be that person. I just need a new body. It goes to a very, very terrifying place. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And here's the other place I see villains. Here's the other place I see villains. I recently, I had my first COVID test for work. My workplace is opening back up on Monday. My schedule is just going to be insane. But everyone has to get a COVID test. And luckily, I didn't have to do the one where it touches your brain. I didn't have to do the lobotomy one. They called this one a mid-nasal swab. But it went a good, I'm going to say a good inch and a half up my nose. If they would have kept going, I would have been concerned. But it was enough. It was high enough where my eyes watered. I didn't like it. And they just swirled around this cotton swab in my one side of the nose, the nostril, and they did the other side of the nostril. And then, I had like a reaction to it. You know, your eyes well up and you don't like it. You want to sneeze and all that good stuff. And then there was like this medicinal drip. There was like a flavor to it. And I said to the nurse, I'm like, wow, that's an odd flavor. She goes, yeah, that's what people tell me. And I joked around. I'm like, well, they should, if it's going to have a taste, they should make flavors. You know, you could have peach or cherry or grape. And she laughed and yay, it was all wonderful. And then the writer in me, the science fiction guy in me, the teller of tall tales, I'm thinking, why does that have any kind of flavor? Like that must be just some kind of agent to
keep reagents.
Yeah.
To preserve. Yeah.
Now, smash cut to the supervillain lab where they have access to all the tests and they just can infect certain tests. They just have the live COVID-19 culture on the end of that swab. And they can just decide, okay, well, the cases are starting to drop off in Seattle, so we need to infect some people there. We need more tests. We need more tests. And then just, air quotes, randomly, you just send a couple of these tests out, and you could make it look completely random. You can make it look completely random, where just as people are getting the tests, you're infecting them. And it's an idea for a story. What's happening. No, I'm not saying that's what's happening at all, but I'm like, boy, that'd be terrifyingly easy. That'd be insanely easy.
Here's what I find incredible.
My personality?
Well, besides that.
The way I look in skinny jeans.
Last week, the CDC came out with new testing guidelines.
Yes.
You don't get tests if you're asymptomatic. And if you're young and symptomatic, unless you get short of breath, you don't need a test.
Right.
If you've been exposed, unless you've been in close quarters for someone talking closely who ends up positive for over 15 minutes, you don't need a test. They know how this thing transfers now. So they put out all these new guidelines, which basically say the kind of testing you're going through, preemptive testing, not necessary, because they know about the immune response now and the T cell response. And they know that a lot of the positive tests we've seen were just viral debris that couldn't infect anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they know, I bet you, if you cornered Dr. Redfield and probably even Dr. Fauci, and said, so the asymptomatic super spreader is bullshit, right? They'd have to admit it.
Yes.
They actually say in the guidance, if you test positive for COVID-19 and you recover, you are considered recovered after you have 24 hours without a fever, without using medication, like Tylenol, Advil, whatever.
Yeah.
And that for 90 days, and they say this right in the guidelines, retesting is it tells you no valuable information because viral debris that a PCR test can amplify is still in your nasal passages.
Yeah. It's
so, like, the CDC is now saying, no, this random asymptomatic testing is not necessary. We can go to sentinel testing in nursing homes and public health facilities just like we do for the flu. Here's what you do if you have symptoms. Here's what you do if you think you're exposed. If you are actually sick and you recover, don't get a retest. And we still have businesses and governments and all this other stuff mandating this crap. And it's useless.
Yes, it is really, and there's fortunes being made off of this, and the side effects of all of this. Look at the way the governors are locking everything down, and people can't go back to work, and you gotta do this. It is. I don't think we're gonna look back at this time in American history fondly.
I just want to know how Gavin Newsom and Andrew Cuomo are going to justify their continued policies when Georgia's coming to the end of its cases spike, right? And yeah. We never did any of that.
Yeah, it's it ain't good. It ain't good. Mm-mm. All right, we have to say goodbye here soon, but we have to give a special shout out to Chad Bozeman. That is the I'm going to call him the young man who you all saw. You saw in Black Panther and the Avengers mm-hmm. Endgame. He played James Brown. He played Jackie Robinson. He played Thurgood Marshall. It's really this one. I don't know why, but when I found out about his past, this one hit me hard. And
yep.
It really did. He had colon cancer, 43 years old. And then, of course, he played Jackie Robinson in the film, and he passed on Jackie Robinson Day. And just what a charismatic dude. What a fine, fine actor. And then you find out that he got this diagnosis years ago,
like 4 years ago, yeah,
and made all these movies. When you see him in Avengers Endgame, he's got it. He's
mm-hmm.
struggling, and boy, that guy gave it his all. He gave it his all. Yep. It really bums me out. Just seemed like a fine dude, and really just way too soon. And it's just I don't know what it means for the Black Panther franchise. I'm sure they'll figure out something there, but like just a bummer. So I just wanted to show our respect and just a tip of the cap. Just that's insanely brave. That's incredibly brave. It's incredibly strong. And to give such great performances when you're undergoing treatment and the whole nine, I got nothing but respect for that dude. Okay. We have...
get your screenings done.
Get your screenings done. About what?
Screening for colon cancer. Super important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't blow it off.
Don't blow it off. Don't make it's my Sam Simon, my buddy Sam, mm-hmm. who he battled, you know, cancer for a long, long time. And his was one of those cases where they're like, if you would have gotten this checked out, you would have been fine. And so, and I'm a bit of a hypocrite over here. So listen, a lot of you. You're going to get a finger in your butt anyway at some point. So every once in a while, let a doctor do it.
Oh, dear Lord. That's the way to close a show.
That is the way to close the show. All right. Thank you so much. Holy smoke. Our GoFundMe. Our GoFundMe is very close. We need, our goal was $2,000. We're going to hook up. We're going to do a wonderful gesture for a police precinct here in New York who've just been getting the short end of the stick. And we're going to do all the shifts. So we set out to raise $2,000. As of this taping, we're right around 1,300. So thank you so much for donating. Thank you so much for supporting the Loftus Party, this podcast, the YouTube channel. Thanks for the Facebook likes and all that stuff. We know they're trying to silence the rational voices, so thanks for lifting us up. You're the wind beneath our wings. See you next time.